question as to the population, the increase of the population of the universe. Maitreya Muni began to reply and explain how the progeny in the Atra Saga Vajagastra, in the Vishaga, or the creation by Lord Brahma, how that increased still further. And he began to tell how Swayambhuva Manus was going to give his daughter named Devahuti to Kardama Muni, who was one of the sons, direct sons of Lord Brahma. And as a result of Kardama Muni combining with Devahuti, the daughter of Swayambhuva Manu, the result were many daughters who were given to the great sages. And as a result of the combination of the daughters of Kardama Muni and Devahuti and the great sages, the universe filled with population. But in addition to that, and in a very real sense, even more important than that, was that Kapila Muni, the incarnation of the Lord, took his birth from Kardama and Devahuti. And it is a wonderful pastime, a very wonderful pastime, and very sweet. So we're right now at the very beginning of that pastime, when Kardama Muni has prayed to the Lord, because those days when people were more spiritually advanced, very different from contemporary days when people are less spiritually advanced, there is one basic conceptual difference as to how people become happy and what one needs to become happy. In contemporary times, people think that I need my own strength to become happy. And based on my own strength, my own desire, my own ingenuity, based on that, the sky is the limit. Practically speaking, I can become anything, do anything, as long as my desire is strong enough. This is the way people think. Actually, I even to show what's behind this type of thought very subtly, I once looked at a self-help book that was cleverly written, and it went on for so many chapters, and then it said, you'll be able, if you know this secret, you'll be able to do anything, achieve anything. And gradually it revealed that chapter after chapter, it said, once we reveal this secret, and it's three words. And then finally, the final chapter revealed those three words, and it is, well, they are, you are God. So that's what people think ultimately, because God means the one who's in control. And when you trust yourself and think things depend upon you, basically, one is thinking that he is the controller. But actually, that's how people act nowadays, in non-spiritual times, in increasingly materialistic times, but in previous times when people wanted to get anything, accomplish anything, do anything, they turned to the Supreme Lord, or at least to powers higher than themselves. They never thought, me, on my own, I shall do it by my power. Rather, they thought, I need help from above. Even if they didn't have the concept of Supreme Lord, they always sought help from above to get their desires met. And that is a more pious way of getting material desires met, actually, because then, especially if one follows scriptures to get one's material desires met, then one's passionate desires, because desires mean passion. So when one has these desires, born of the mode of passion, one's passion will be transformed or almost sublimated, gradually purified into goodness due to submission to a higher power. But as long as we're thinking that everything goes by my power, and practically speaking there is no power higher than me, then those passionate desires will turn to ignorance, which will further degrade the living entity. Practically speaking, that is ignorance. Thinking that I am the supreme, that everything depends on me and I can do everything on my own. That is ignorance. Ignorance of reality. It is illusion. So in any case, Kodama Muni, upon being ordered, he was a great yogi and a great devotee, and upon being ordered by Lord Brahma to increase the population of the universe, he meditated for 10,000 years. And then, after that long, he pleased the Supreme Lord, Lord Narayan, and who appeared before him. And today, if Krishna allows, we will read the prayers of Kodama Muni. They are quite sweet and quite interesting and very pertinent. Because sometimes we hear of persons, very often, that are just so ideal. They're so pure and ideal. We wish we were like them, but we're not like them. Our hearts are filled with so many material desires and longings. Then what do we do? So although Kodama Muni is still so much above us, he could sit, he meditated for 10,000 years. I mean, he's quite determined. Very determined, with consciousness so focused. So we can't do that. It was for a different age. But yet, there is a great parallel in that he had something that he wanted from Krishna. And we'll hear about that and the truths that he will recite in his prayers. So the great in text 13 in the 21st chapter of the third canto. The great sage Kodama Muni, upon seeing the Lord, said, O worshipful Supreme Lord, O Supreme Worshipful Lord, my power of sight is now fulfilled, having attained the greatest perfection of the sight of you, who are the reservoir of all existences. Through many successive births of deep meditation, advanced yogis aspire to see your transcendental form. So we'll go through the verses in this sequence, 13 through 21, and then we'll go back and read the purports. We'll try to get a feel for the entire sequence. So first he explains, Kodama Muni says, I've seen you because the Lord appeared before him. We can't even imagine, practically speaking, how wonderful it is when someone with a purified heart attracts the Lord to such a degree that the Lord appears before him and he actually gets the sight of the Lord. This is called Shakshad Darshan. He exactly sees the Lord. He directly sees the Lord. That only happens by the Lord's divine mercy, his divine grace. So this is the perfection of yoga. The four Kumaras, we heard how they went to Vaikuntha, and then they had been meditating upon the Lord, but they actually saw the Lord and they said, oh, this is the most wonderful thing. So this may take advanced yogis millions of successive births. It is such a great perfection. This is the ultimate conclusion, samadhi. To directly focus their consciousness, one's consciousness on the Lord, and then finally to see the Lord. So this is the perfection of one's sight. Then in the next verse, your lotus feet are the true vessels to take one across the ocean of mundane nescience. So the Lord's lotus feet will take us, if we hold on to Him, His service, they will take us across the ocean of material misery to the other side, the spiritual world. And only persons deprived of their intelligence by the spell of the deluding energy will worship those feet with a view to attain the trivial and momentary pleasures of the senses, which even persons rotting in hell can attain. However, O my Lord, you are so kind that you bestow your mercy upon them. So he's saying that now I can see you. People will worship you, and your feet are so powerful that they can carry one across. They are like vessels, boats, that can take one across to the other side of the burden, the world or the ocean of birth and death. But foolish people, instead of worshiping you to get out of the material world, worship you to get something within the material world. So this has to be called foolish. And yet you are so kind that you bestow upon them your blessings. So that is mercy, and you give them what they want. And now here is the time of his admitting his situation. He called those people who desire something in the material world foolish. And now he's saying, I'm like that. Therefore, desiring to marry a girl of like disposition, who may prove to be a veritable cow of plenty in my married life, to satisfy my lustful desire, I too have sought the shelter of your lotus feet, which are the source of everything, for you are like a desire tree. So he's saying, yes, foolish people want material things, and I have to count myself amongst those people, and what do I want? I want a wife. And I have come to you to seek a wife because you are like a desire tree. A desire tree reciprocates equally with whatever the person there wants. He will give them that. So you have that capacity. So I have sought the shelter of your lotus feet to give. So I'm asking you for a wife of a like disposition. Oh my Lord, you are the master and leader of all living entities. Under your direction, all conditioned souls, as if bound by rope, are constantly engaged in satisfying their desires. So here we are. These desires are compared to what? Being bound by rope, because they tie us up. We like to be free, but what stops our freedom? It's these desires, selfish, material desires. They keep us bound to the material world and bound to the world of birth and death. And following those desires, following them, O embodiment of religion, I also bear oblations for you who are eternal time. So everyone is trapped. And we go to you to satisfy our desires. So again, he is speaking as a very pious soul, not like the contemporary people who don't go to anyone but go to their own strength. So now going back on the other side. So what has he said so far? He said that foolish people, you seeing you is the most wonderful thing. You can take us across the ocean of birth and death. But foolish people, they worship you for material things, and you are the one who grants them that, and I am such a foolish person like that, and I want something from you, and what do I want? I want a wife. And then he says that all people are actually bound by their desires, but yet I am approaching you to satisfy my desires. Because everyone is dependent upon Krishna to satisfy their desires. But on the other side, persons who have given up stereotype worldly affairs and the beastly followers of those affairs, these affairs, when Prabhupada says beastly, he means animalistic. That's what beastly means. When people are interested in worldly affairs, practically speaking, and Prabhupada speaks very strongly sometimes, he says they're like animals. And practically worldly affairs means that people are interested in only eating, sleeping, mating, defending, fighting, killing, enjoying. Animals! And we see what these animals do to each other and what they do to the world, practically speaking, heartless, like animals, low consciousness. So people who have given up stereotype worldly affairs, meaning that everyone else is doing, that everyone thinks, oh, when you think of what the people of this world in a stereotype fashion, think of what will bring them happiness, what do they think of? Just boring stereotype things, you know, they want to sit with a, what do you, they call it in Australia, a stubby, right? Is that the proper term for it? Stubby? You know what is stubby? You know? Anyway, if you continue in TAFE long enough, you'll get your education. What is stubby? In front of television, and then really enjoy life in illusion. So this is giving up those affairs and associating with people who follow these affairs. And those who give up these things, and where do they get their happiness and where do they get their freedom from misery? They have taken shelter of the umbrella of your lotus feet by drinking the intoxicating nectar of your qualities and activities in discussions with one another. They can be freed from the primary necessities of the material body. So yes, I have this material desire, and I'm going to you to ask for the fulfillment of that desire. But people who are actually engaged fully in spiritual life, they can give up completely all desires, including the necessities of the body. This stage is very advanced. Now why should we give up trying to satisfy our material desires? So in the next verse, in text 18, Kardama Muni explains about that which will ultimately cut us down, and that is your wheel, which has three knaves, rotates around the axis of the imperishable Brahman. It has 13 spokes, 360 joints, six rims, and numberless leaves carved upon it. Through its revolution, it cuts short the lifespan of the entire creation. This wheel of tremendous velocity cannot touch the lifespan of the devotee of the Lord. So, if one is materialistic, one will be cut down ultimately by the wheel of time. Actually, the Sudarshan Chakra of Krishna is time, the time factor. And its function, the time factor's function, is to shorten the lives of the materialistic person and ruin each and every one of his plans. But for a devotee, as has already been explained in the second canto, time, although it diminishes by every rising and setting of the sun, it diminishes the life of a materialistic person. It cannot touch a devotee who is engaged in hearing and chanting about Krishna. So therefore, one should give up. Ultimately, one should and must, for his own welfare, give up material desires. Not just identify with the mind and its desires. I want something, therefore I must do it and engage myself fully in trying to become satisfied in this way. So no, not identifying with the mind, because time will cut down all our plans, shorten our life, step by step, day by day. But for a devotee, one who has renounced matter and lives in the realm of spirit, time does not touch him. Kardama continues, "My dear Lord, you alone create the universes. O Personality of Godhead, desiring to create these universes, you create them, maintain them, and again wind them up by your own energies, which are under the control of your second energy called Yogamaya. Just as a spider creates a cobweb by its own energy and again winds it up." Now it's a little change of subject, but we'll go back to that one, this main thrust. He says, you are the creator, you are the maintainer, you are the destroyer of these worlds. So then naturally one thinks, why does the Lord do this? We have material desires. Ultimately, they bind us. We are in the material world. Ultimately, the material world is the place for satisfaction of material desires. Ultimately, the combination of our desires and the material world, they bind us. And yet Krishna is the supreme controller, he's the supreme creator. Now why has he done this? Although it is not your desire, my dear Lord, you manifest this creation of gross and subtle elements just for our sensual satisfaction. Because we have the desire to independently enjoy this. This whole daryayam jagat, daryate jagat, this whole material world is created in one sense by us. We are the second, certainly Krishna is the primary creator of the material world, but we, having material desires, have created in the sense that Krishna has reciprocated with our desires, and therefore the material world exists. So this material world is a creation with its gross and subtle elements just for our sensual satisfaction. Let your causeless mercy be upon us, for you have appeared before us in your eternal form, adorned with a splendid wreath, a garland of tulsi leaves. So you've still, although we have our material desires, you have so kindly appeared before us, showing us your effulgently wonderful transcendental form. And we will see later on, because this theme of having material desires and yet worshipping the Lord is started right in the beginning of the second canto, when the Lord tells, or rather, Sukadev says to Maharaj Prakrit, akamasava kamava moksha kamavadarati, that regardless of your position, you have material desires no matter what you want. Even if you are pure or not, still worship the Lord. Tivena bhakti yogini ajeta purushapara. And then later on, so that happened before this, and then in the next canto, which we will get to if Krishna allows fairly soon, in the next canto, in the fourth canto, Dhruva Maharaj will see that he had material desires and he was so determined to get it. He was so determined. But because he was so pious, he had turned to Krishna with that determination. And Krishna came before him himself, Prishnigarb, came before him to satisfy his material desires. And then upon seeing the Lord, he realized that my material desires are compared to like a piece of glass, and I was looking for that piece of glass, and now the jewel has come. So what is the value of the glass in the presence of the jewel, the valuable emerald, the ruby, the diamond? So Krishna is so kind that he's given this material world, it's the creation is there as in reciprocation with our material desires, but yet he comes to this world to break our material desires. And therefore in the final verse in his prayers he says, Kadama Muni says, I continuously offer my respectful obeisances unto your lotus feet, of which it is worthy to take shelter. Because we are all looking for shelter. Because it is at the core of our nature, no matter how strong we may think we are, no matter how strong we would like to convince others that we are actually needing shelter. We are incomplete, and the world is very powerful and very fearful. Actually, it is fearful. So, he offers, Kodama Muni, such a powerful yogi, doesn't think that he is God, but rather he offers his obeisances to the lotus feet of the Lord, which is worthy to take shelter of. Samashitam ye parapalava plavam mahatpadam punyaya sho marari. Because, why am I taking shelter of you, Kodama Muni says, because you shower all benedictions on the insignificant. And I want a benediction, and I am insignificant. To give all living entities detachment from fruit of activity by realizing you have expanded these material worlds by your own energy. So So look what Krishna does. In reciprocation with our desire, he creates the material world, but not to just create the material world, but rather to breed detachment within our heart. That's actually the purpose of the material world, because the material world is like, it is a reflection, as described in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. It is a reflection of the spiritual world. And just imagine how much pleasure we would have if everything we ate was only the reflection of food. We would be starving, and that's what the material world is like. It is the reflection of pleasure. It looks like it should be there. The apple in the reflection looks just as tasty, practically speaking, as the real fruit. But there's no substance to it. That is our situation. So when we understand that I'm looking in the wrong place, what happens at this point is we think, oh, this plan to make me happy, I've gotten this, and yet somehow or another I'm still not happy. That's because I don't have that. And when I get that, I'll be happy. And then we get that. Oh, I think I need that now. But the actual fact is we'll be chasing that trail of I just need that, I just need that, I just need that forever and ever and ever, and never achieve happiness, because this is the world of the reflection that we're looking in. So what should happen is, one, by good association and by hearing Shastra, we should understand that there is actually, the problem is we're looking in the wrong place. There is no happiness there. Dukalayama shashvatam nitya sukaloka. It is a miserable place by definition, where repeated birth and death take place. And let me look to the actual reality of which this is just a reflection. So detachment will occur. And not just working to enjoy the reflection. So that is actually the purpose of the material world and the purpose of Krishna's coming to the material world. So, and in this way, Kaudama Muni offers his obeisances continuously. That is actually what we wish to do. That is actually the way a devotee thinks. Not that I offer my obeisances and that's it. Or I offer them once a day or three times a day. Really what the devotee wants is kirtaniya sadahari. When we want continuous shelter. That's what continuous obeisances mean. Because we want continuous full shelter. Nothing else will satisfy us. And the way to do that is have our consciousness continuously seeking shelter of Krishna, and we don't have to do anything else. That means we should continuously be praying, offering obeisances, reciting prayers, chanting. If we can do that, we don't have to do anything else. Etya eva kinkaram. This is what manmana bhava manbhakto. This is Sarvadamam Pratyaja. Continuous. Ahaitukiya Pratyata. Continuous. This is religion, actually. This is the actual meaning of Dharma or religion. Not church on Sunday, temple on Sunday. But real religion means that which sustains dharma, means which sustains the living entity. So what sustains the living entity is continuous touch with Krishna and devotion. So that this is how Kadama offers his prayers, and that's how he ends his prayers. So read them again. And read some of Prabhupada's illuminating purports. So Kadama Muni begins by saying, O worshipful, supreme worshipful Lord, my power of sight is now fulfilled, having attained the greatest perfection of the sight of you, who are the reservoir of all existence. Everything comes from him. And we'll hear in a later prayer, he says that everything comes from you, everything is maintained by you, everything is destroyed by you. And to see you, through many successive births of deep meditation, advanced yogis aspire to see your transcendental form. Prabhupada's purport. Kadama Muni says, quote, "Your lordship is the reservoir of all that can be understood by the nomenclature of goodness. And by experiencing you face to face, eye to eye, the perfection of sight has now been attained." End quote. These statements are the pure devotional situation. For a devotee, the perfection of the senses is to engage in the service of the Lord. The sense of sight, when engaged in seeing the beauty of the Lord, is perfected. The power to hear, when engaged in hearing the glories of the Lord, is perfected. The power to taste, when one enjoys by eating prasadam, is perfected. When all the senses engage in relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one's perfection is technically called bhakti yoga, which entails detaching the senses from material indulgence and attaching them to the service of the Lord. When one is freed from all designated conditional life and fully engages in the service of the Lord, one's service is called bhakti yoga. So nice definition of what bhakti yoga is. This is basically a paraphrase from the Puranas. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Uchate Sarva Upadi Vinyamuktam Tat Paratvena Nirmalam. That one frees himself from any other conception of what one is. Because right now I have so many upadis or overlays upon who I am. I'm thinking I'm a man, I'm thinking I'm 52, I'm thinking I'm an American, Australian, I'm thinking I'm this, I'm thinking I'm that. But what actually am I? So get rid of all of those temporary designations and understand who I am. And who am I? I am Krishna's. I belong to Krishna. I am his part. I am his parcel. Krishna is mine. And then with that mind, taking the senses and engaging each and every one of them, the eyes, the nose, taste, smell, hands, everything, legs, using all the senses in that consciousness to serve Krishna, that is the definition of bhakti yoga. Sarva upadhi vinimuktam tat paratvena niyamalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhakti uchate. That is called bhakti. And then one can say, okay, when I'm doing all that, what should I desire? It's not exactly a sense. And Prabhupada in the last line of the purport says, those who are actually on the advanced path aspire only to see the eternal form of the Lord. So we should be longing. This is advanced. But we shouldn't have desires for so many other things, because none of them will make us happy. But what should we be desiring? We should be desiring to see Krishna, because he is so beautiful. There are descriptions in the Bhagavatam of Krishna's beauty as he enters the forest, and how everyone is captivated by his beauty. So we read and hear about Krishna, and we should become captivated by his beauty. And we should desire to be with him and to see him. And that desire should burn so brightly in our consciousness that it removes, it burns away any other and every other desire. Kadama Muni continues, describing the lotus feet of the Lord. Your lotus feet are the true vessels, the true vessel to take one across the ocean of mundane nescience. Only persons deprived of their intelligence by the spell of the deluding energy will worship those feet with a view to attain the trivial and momentary pleasures of the senses, which even persons rotting in hell can attain. Tasya eva hetu prayate tu kovido na labhyate yad brahmaratam upariyada. So sense gratification is available anywhere and everywhere. dogs, birds, rhinoceroses, monkeys, lions, cats, they all enjoy eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Bugs, slaters, spiders, mosquitoes. Human life is meant for something else. Talabhyate, dukavad, anyat sukham. So that we should try to get that thing with our human life that we will never lose, which is unavailable in the material world, and that thing is spiritual consciousness. And therefore, Maharaj Rishabhdev says, Nayam deha deho bhajan riloke kastan kaman arati vidbhujan ye tapo divyam putrakayena satvam shudye. We should purify our consciousness and get yasmad brahma sokyam, the greatest happiness, twanantam, which is eternal. That's what life is meant, human life is meant for. So by hearing about Kadama Muni, these desires should more and more fill our own hearts. And then Kadama Muni says, therefore, because you people foolish worship you to gain material things, but yet you are so kind that you award benedictions, and therefore, because I'm desiring to marry a girl of a like disposition who may prove to be a veritable cow of plenty in my married life, to satisfy my lustful desires, I too have sought the shelter of your lotus feet, which are the source of everything for you, are like a desire tree. In Prabhupada's purport, he explains how a pious person goes about satisfying desires like marriage. And the Vedic culture was actually based on this. And Prabhupada explains, nowadays, instead of having the parents arrange marriages, now that's considered a very horrible thing. If a parent dares try to arrange a marriage for the child, it'll make the front page of the newspaper, and it'll be so nasty and sarcastic and critical. But nowadays, now they have gotten rid of that horrible arranged marriage done by the parents, who are actually only interested in the child's welfare, and they've awarded the young boys and girls freedom to have love marriages. And what's the result? Previously, there was never any divorce. And nowadays, practically, there's never any marriage for very long. So this is progress, and no one will admit it, what they're calling progress in this current day is a failure. Formerly, husband and wife used to live together peacefully throughout their whole lives, but nowadays it is a very difficult task. I remember my grandparents, they celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary, and now if someone's married for 50 years, it means they've been married to 5 or 6 or 7 people probably, in total it's 50 years. And Prabhupada explains, the advantage of worshipping the Supreme is that even if one has desires for material enjoyment, if he worships Krishna, he will gradually become a pure devotee and have no more material hankering. So that there's ways to satisfy one's material desires so that those desires will become weaker, not stronger, and that the real ultimate purpose of life will shine through like the sun. Niharam iva bhaskaram, dissipates the fog. Kadama Muni, then he says, so I have done this. Part of religion is to satisfy one's material desires in a pious way, and even though it is binding, and I've approached you to do this. And then Prabhupada explains, a question may be raised. Since Kadama Muni was advanced in spiritual life, why then did he not ask the Lord for liberation? Why did he want to enjoy material life in spite of his personally seeing and experiencing the Supreme Lord? The answer is that not everyone is competent to be liberated from material bondage. It is everyone's duty, therefore, to enjoy according to his present position, but under the direction of the Lord or the Vedas. The Vedas are considered to be the direct words of the Lord. The Lord gives us the opportunity to enjoy material life as we want, and at the same time, he gives direction for the modes and processes of abiding by the Vedas so that gradually one may be elevated to liberation from material bondage. The conditioned souls who have come to the material world to fulfill their desires, to lord it over the material world, are bound by the laws of nature. The best course is to abide by the Vedic rules that will help one be gradually elevated to liberation. And then at the end of the purport, Prabhupada says, one should live a life of piety, follow the religious rules and regulations, marry, and live peacefully for elevation to the higher status of spiritual realization. So even the material enjoyment in the Vedic culture was meant ultimately for spiritual realization. However, persons who give up the stereotype worldly affairs and the beastly followers of these affairs, and who have taken shelter of the umbrella of your lotus feet by drinking the intoxicating nectar of your qualities and activities in discussions with one another, can be freed from the primary necessities of the material body. Srila Prabhupada's purport. After describing the necessities of married life, Kadama Muni asserts that marriage and other social affairs are stereotype regulations for persons who are addicted to material sense enjoyment. The principles of animal life, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, are actually necessities of the body. But those who engage in transcendental Krishna consciousness, giving up all the stereotyped activities of this material world, are freed from social conventions. Conditioned souls are under the spell of material energy or eternal time, past, present, and future. But as soon as one engages in Krishna consciousness, he transcends the limits of past and present and becomes situated in the eternal activities of the soul. So this is the ultimate. The other is, we're not on the level of being able to achieve immediately the ultimate, so taking the process that will gradually bring us to the ultimate. So one has to act in the terms of the Vedic injunctions in order to enjoy material life. But those who have taken to the devotional service of the Lord are not afraid of the regulations of this material world. Such devotees do not care for the conventions of material activities. They boldly take to that shelter, which is like an umbrella against the sun of repeated birth and death. Constant transmigration of the soul from one body to another is the cause of suffering in material existence. This conditional life in material existence is called samsara. One may perform good work and take his birth in a very nice material condition, but the process under which birth and death takes place is like a terrible fire. We never think it's going to happen to us, but it will. It must. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, in his prayer to the spiritual master, has described this. Samsara, or the repetition of birth and death, is compared to a forest fire. A forest fire takes place automatically without anyone's endeavor by the friction of dry wood, and no fire department or sympathetic person can extinguish it. The raging forest fire can be extinguished only when there is a constant downpour of water from a cloud. The cloud is compared to the mercy of the spiritual master. By the grace of the spiritual master, the cloud of the mercy of the personality of Godhead is brought in, and then only when the rains of Krishna consciousness fall can the fire of material existence be extinguished. This is also explained here. In order to find freedom from the stereotype conditional life of material existence, one has to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, not in the manner in which impersonalists indulge, but in devotional service, chanting and hearing of the activities of the Lord. Ihan mali nitya sechi shravanade jal. If we want our Krishna consciousness to grow, We have to hear and chant, otherwise it will wither and die. Only then can one be freed from the actions and reactions of material existence. It is recommended here that one should give up the conditioned life of the material world and the association of so-called civilized human beings who are simply following in a polished way the same stereotyped principles of eating, sleeping, defending, and mating. Chanting and hearing of the glories of the Lord is described here as Tvaguna Vadya Siddhu. Only by drinking the nectar of chanting and hearing the pastimes of the Lord can one forget the intoxication of material existence. So this, we should remember so many things. But only by drinking the nectar of chanting and hearing the pastimes of the Lord can one forget the intoxication of material existence. What's the main intoxication of material existence? It's this, the body. Prabhupada once said that compared to this intoxication, thinking that we are the body, all other intoxication is like salt and pepper. It's not the main meal. It's just the little spice on the real big intoxication. So Prabhupada hints at it in the purport that samsara, birth and death, will overtake us. And then the next verse speaks about it strongly, about time away, diminishing the life of each and every person in the material world, but it not touching the devotees, because the devotees don't live on the platform of the material body. They live on the eternal platform. And then, my dear Lord, you alone create the universes. O personality of Godhead, desiring to create these universes, you create them, maintain them, and again wind them up by your own energies, which are under the control of your second energy, called Yogamaya, just as a spider creates a cobweb by its own energy and again winds it up. Prabhupada says in the purport that the prayers, the fact that Kardama is praying to the Lord, shows that the Lord has qualities. He has the quality of being able to hear. He has the quality of sentience, of consciousness. So he's not at all impersonal. And therefore, because he's not impersonal, he can reciprocate with the prayers and the desires of his devotees. So the problem is that we have to desire strongly. Of course, if we desire Krishna's service strongly, he will reciprocate with us 100 times more strongly. For the problem is, we are bahu shaka tarantascha budaya avyasayinam. Our desires are not focused on Krishna. Yeah, we desire to make advancement, and also we desire a new bicycle and a new set of trains or something, some toys or another. So if we focus our consciousness and our desires on Krishna, making them very strong, then it will be very soon that we go back to Godhead. And Krishna will reciprocate wonderfully because he is a person. He's a person like we are people. I heard a tape today, and Prabhupada was asked, how powerful is Krishna? All the devotees were listening, because it wasn't one of the devotees who asked that question. And all the devotees started laughing. And Prabhupada answered it very seriously. He said, it's not hard to understand. He said, there's the ocean and a drop. We are like a drop, and Krishna is like the ocean. So he was saying that, try to understand how powerful you are. Whatever power you have, that's like a drop compared to the ocean. Now next time you see the ocean, just look at the difference between a drop and this vast, 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 unlimited ocean. So Krishna is so powerful, inconceivably powerful. So therefore, he has the ability to give shelter. And therefore, Kadama Muni says that you've created this world to bring detachment within our heart so we can become attracted to you. And therefore I continuously pay my obeisances and take shelter unto you. Prabhupada explains in the purport, it is clearly stated here that the material world is not created by the personal will of the Supreme Lord. It is created by his external energy because the living entities want to enjoy it. This material world is not created for those who do not want to enjoy sense gratification, who constantly remain in transcendental loving service, and who are eternally Krishna conscious. For them, the spiritual world is eternally existing, and they enjoy there. Elsewhere in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated, for those who have taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this material world is useless, because this material world is full of danger at every step. It is not meant for the devotees, but for the living entities who want to lord it over the material energy at their own risk. Krishna is so kind that he allows the sense-enjoying living entities a separate world created by him to enjoy as they like. Yet at the same time, he appears in his personal form. The Lord unwillingly creates this material world, but he descends in his personal form to attract the living entity to him, because he's so attractive, and Krishna means the all-attractive. So he comes in his personal form, or he sends one of his reliable sons, or a servant, or a reliable author like Vyasadeva, to give instructions. He himself also instructs in his speeches of Bhagavad Gita. This propaganda work goes on side by side with the creation to convince the misguided living entities who are rotting in this material world to come back to him and surrender unto him. Therefore, the last instruction of Bhagavad Gita is this: give up all your manufactured engagements in the material world and just surrender unto me. I shall protect you from all sinful reactions. So therefore, Kadama Muni offers his obeisances continuously to the Lord, because he showers his benedictions on the insignificant, and he's created this world by his own potency to give living entities detachment, and Prabhupada explains in the purport. Everyone, therefore, whether he desires material enjoyment, liberation, or the transcendental loving service of the Lord, should engage himself offering obeisances unto the Supreme Lord, because the Lord can award everyone his desired benediction. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord affirms, Yeyatam mam prapadyante, anyone who desires to be a successful enjoyer in this material world is awarded that benediction by the Lord. And anyone who wants to be liberated from the entanglement of this material world is given liberation by the Lord. And anyone who desires to constantly engage in his service in full Krishna consciousness is awarded that benediction by the Lord. And Prabhupada concludes this purport, and this is concluding the verses of the prayers of Kadama Muni. The conclusion is that one should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead for any benediction. The word Kama Varsham is very significant, for it indicates that he satisfies the desires of anyone who approaches him. But one who sincerely loves Krishna and yet wants material enjoyment is in perplexity. Krishna, being very kind towards him, gives him an opportunity to engage in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, and so he gradually forgets the hallucination. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Kadama Muni ki jai. Any questions or comments? Nice prayers. Because we've just heard about the creation. This is actually the third time we've heard about the creation three times already. So after hearing about the creation and the Lord's the source of it, so now we're hearing also what the purpose of the creation is. On one level, the purpose of the creation is so that we can enjoy it. On the other level, It's that we can try to enjoy it, but it's impossible for us to enjoy it because we're being crushed and cut by the wheel of time, day by day. And therefore, the purpose of the material world is to create detachment, and on the other hand, to help with that and to help us gain attachment to the spiritual and understand the philosophy. Krishna himself comes, he sends, so many incarnations come, so many servants come, and he speaks the Bhagavad Gita in this way, preaches to fill us with Krishna conscious instructions so that we can leave this hallucinatory material world and go back to God. Any questions or comments? Yeah, the Uddhava Gita, and in the 10th canto, he gives instructions to the wives of the brahmanas, he gives instructions to the gopis, tells them to go home when they come to see him. He gives, where else does Krishna give instructions? Where? What instructions? So many places. He gives in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, he gives instructions to Arjuna so Arjuna can be protected from the Brahmastra that Asatama shot towards him. Then he gives instructions to the Pandavas so that they don't fight amongst themselves about what to be done with Asatama. And then any other questions, comments? Okay. Hare Krishna.